Willem Engel, human rights activist.
Can you summarize or boil down the reasoning behind these farmers' protests we've seen in Holland?
Absolutely. So there's, I think, three sides to this story. The farmers want to keep farming, and they are very good at it. Holland is the second largest exporter of agricultural products in the world, just after the United States. So it's pride, but it's also business. We have about 60,000 farmers, I believe. So it's a relatively small contingent of the population, which is very productive and which is highly technologically advanced in Holland. We have an agricultural university, and we have a lot of innovation in farming. Then comes the second part, the legislation and the overreach out of Europe. So what we see is an encroachment of European legislation, where our Dutch government says we can't do anything because our overlords in Europe, in Brussels, have decided that this and this. Now, that is very disingenuous, because when you look at the legislation, there is legislation that is coming specifically from Holland, and that's the third angle. So the Dutch say it's about nitrogen, Europe says it's about nature, and the reality is Agenda 2030. So this is about stealing land from farmers, because farmers are independent, and they're at the top of the chain of independence. If you take away the farmers, who takes over the food supply? The big food concerns, and they want to create food hubs. This is a program of the World Economic Forum, together with this Wageningen, the agricultural university, to really consolidate the control over the food supply. Now, Stalin has showed this with the Holodomor in Ukraine when he was in power, that this is a very effective way of controlling the populace. I won't say that is the same goals as Stalin had, but there is some resemblance to try to control the populace via the food supply. And what we see is that mostly the supermarket chains are in on this plan. So the deals they make with farmers are not very, very good for the farmers. That's one side, the commerce side. And then the other side, the European Union and our local government are trying to encroach literally on the farmers, trying to expropriate them literally, saying this is too close to this nature reserve. And that's where Natura 2000 comes in. It's an idea that in Holland, we don't have any pristine forest. Everything is cultural area. There's not a tree that is there out of itself. It was planted in Holland. If you fly over the country, it's a neat patchwork. But some parts, 2,000 parts, very small parts, completely scattered over the area, mainly in the agricultural area in the east of the country, have been assigned as nature reserve. Now, around that nature reserve, the emission values are even more stringent. And they talk about the critical deposition value of nitrogen, which is a bullshit term. It does not really exist in the sense of that there is dry deposition. So the idea is that farmers make manure, the manure emits ammonia, and that ammonia then precipitates back into the earth, actually enriching the ground, and by enriching the ground, grass and other stuff will grow, but these endangered species will not grow. And these endangered species are so-called in these Nature 2000 reserves. Now, the measurement they do is very similar to this, to the hoax they perpetrated on us with COVID-19, with the fake PCR test that has a lot of false positives. They do a certain thing that resembles this. They talk about what you would call in COVID the asymptomatic transmission. There's asymptomatic carriers, but asymptomatic transmission is not a thing. It doesn't really exist. So this dry deposition of ammonia By the way, I studied pharmacy, so I'm very familiar with compounds. So this dry deposition of ammonia doesn't exist because the density of ammonia is lighter than air or less than air. So the only way ammonia gets back into the soil if it dissolves in water vapor and then precipitates with rain. And that's where they tweak and turn to make the critical deposition so low that no farmer can ever reach that goal. So the only way is to expropriate, and it goes with slices. They say, okay, first you have to cut your artificial fertilizer, then your manure, then you have to change the food in low emission food for your cattle. Now you have to take away half of your cattle. It's still not enough. Okay, now we have to confiscate your farm. And then once they confiscate the farm, they also want the farmer to sign an agreement that he does not start a farm again, ever. And that's the farming business. But how we know that it's part of this Agenda 2030 is now the same thing happens with the fishermen. And Holland is a really a fishing country. They're wrecking all the fishing fleets because of nature.
Because of the environmental impact.
Exactly, the environmental impact. And when you look at these models that calculate environmental impact, you see a few things. One thing in particular is that big industry is left out. So the guys that actually pollute, the steel ovens in IJmuiden or Schiphol or this in Rotterdam, the harbor and the shipping lane, are left out of these models. And all these tankers come to Rotterdam because the legislation here is abominable. All kinds of very heavy pollutants are put in the shipping oil and burned. So Rotterdam has a lot of pollution. And they calculate it out of the model. So the model shows what they want to see, namely that the fishers and the farmers have to be expropriated to save nature.
Okay, but oil is obviously important, the world's largest commodity, but food is more important than oil.
Absolutely.
Why would they be getting rid of food? People have to eat, and we're in the middle of a food crisis now. What's their thought process?
Yes, so they created the food crisis for exactly the same reason as Stalin did. If there's a scarcity in food, and a scarcity in energy, and a scarcity in water, and a scarcity in housing, because all these things happen at the same time, it's very easy to control people. And the lower half of income in Holland, I think, would readily adopt a basic income. And that basic income is coupled to the CBDC. And that's another pillar of this Agenda 2030. It's the digitalization of society. And with digitalization comes control.
And okay, let me run this by you. We were discussing this yesterday, and I totally agree with everything you're saying. But the question is, what's the underlying motivation of this? And one of the things that we noticed, we pointed out, is everything on their agenda, everything, every issue that the globalists push leads to death. Abortion, euthanasia, gay rights, gay marriage. You can't have kids. Even, you know, free condoms. I mean, we've seen in the Darien where they're giving out condoms to the people that go through the Darien. Every single thing, and even more, the environmental stuff that they're doing. Less food means less people. I've seen videos of these guys, Klaus Schwab, Bill Gates, giving speeches about how the world, for the world to be sustainable, the maximum population we can have on Earth is 500 million people. It means we have to get rid of 7.5 billion people to get there. And they're going to attack that from every angle to try to create less people.
Absolutely.
So would you say that's the ultimate goal?
Absolutely. So the ideology behind this Agenda 2030 is an old ideology, and it's called Neo-Malthusianism. So if you look at the father of Bill Gates, for instance, he was an avid supporter of Neo-Malthusianism. Now, what that means, Malthus is an economic scholar from Great Britain in the 19th century, and his idea was that we outgrow our food supply constantly, so there will always be a very unhappy bunch that has a lot of suffering.
At the bottom of the Malthusian hierarchy of needs, right?
Yes. How can we solve that? Now, what the Neo-Malthusianists have different from the old one is that they think they can manage it. And birth control is a big one. Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. in Holland it's called the Rutger Stichting, have the same founders, have the same ideology. And this is worldwide. Mm-hmm. This document, I think General Flynn just posted it on internet, from Henry Kissinger from 1974, very clearly states the objectives of population control and depopulation. So this is an old plan. If you want to go back to the starting point, it's the International Health Regulation meeting of the WHO, or the United Nations, in 1969. And it's stepped and phased. Another very important part was 1992. You had a few meetings, the coming about of the European Union, because it was the European Economical Zone. That was a fine project. Mm-hmm. And then it became an ideological project. 1992. Another one is the meeting in Rio de Janeiro, Agenda 21, so the outlook for the next century. And there they started to discuss biodiversity, etc. Then the next one was the Manhattan Principles, and that's where they really made it very specific. And this is called One Health, the One Health ideology. It's September 2004, Rockefeller University. Mm-hmm. They stated, How can we get from this ideology that was adopted in this Rio de Janeiro conference in 1992 to policy implementation? And that policy, so the One Health, coupling human health to environmental health to animal health, that is the triangle or the trinity that they are trying to push upon us to get us to surrender our sovereignty, to surrender our autonomy, and to make us as an individual responsible for everything that goes wrong in the world. So if there's a problem with health, we have seen with COVID, it's not a communal approach. No, you had to take a jab. You had to wear a mask. You had to distance. Same thing with the food supply. It's not that we change something. No. The farmer has to give up his farm. He has to cut down his cattle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have to stop eating meat. Mm-hmm. So constantly, the sacrifice is an individual sacrifice for the common good. Mm-hmm. And this is social justice, common good. That's where these things interact. Because the one stream is a Neo-Malthusianist. The other stream is where George Soros comes in. And George Soros is known for shaping society. And Klaus Schwab, of course, is an avid supporter of that, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Now, this is called social engineering. And if you look at the name of his foundation, Open Society Foundation, this is hinting, or actually literally taken from the book of Karl Popper, Open Society and Its Enemies. So if you look at mass migration, this is one of the end goals of this whole plan. Mm-hmm. It's to destroy national identity, to destroy culture, to destroy the family unit. And this is very reminiscent from what they tried in the communist era.
How does the tri-state city come into this?
Yeah, so the tri-state city will be a hub. Their whole philosophy has changed from spheres of influence to networks. So the networks have nodes, and the tri-state city is a very important node. Of course, we have the Rotterdam Harbor, which until the 1990s was the biggest harbor in the world and still is Europe's most important harbor. We have a lot of rivers coming together here, and we're close to most of the capitals of Western Europe. That's a very important part. Then if you look at Holland, Holland always has played a very important role. And it goes back until the creation of the Kingdom of the Netherlands, because we used to be a republic. The Bill of Rights is based on our Bill of Rights from 1580 to 1581, I believe, the Acte van Verlatingen. So Holland was changed to be a state in between the three great powers, England, France, and Germany. And from that moment, things are decided in Holland. And the Bilderberg Conference is a very good example of it.
The Hague.
The Hague, yeah. The International Crime Court. But there's much more that is decided in Holland and Belgium, of course, because that used to be the other part of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. So NATO and the European Commission, they're all in Brussels. And if we look at the EMA, it's in Amsterdam. And there's a lot of these institutions that are not here by accident. So this is one of the hubs for information. Also, the internet ocean line from the United States to Europe comes into Katwijk. This is the main center where there's the connection. We have a lot of food innovation, so these food hubs, distribution network, information network, all comes together here.
Interesting. And so they plan a city of 60 million people.
Yeah,
here,
more or less. So the idea is that
the 15-minute city kind of thing?
Those are two different things. The tri-state city is also a way to break national identity, because it will be with part of Germany and the Dutch-speaking part of France, and the Dutch-speaking part of Belgium, interacting and making transportation and information network.
What's their timeline for this?
Their timeline, it's still in the thought phase. It's a bit like the line in Saudi Arabia, also a very megalomaniac project.
I did a story about that last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I went there. It's amazing. Yeah. I saw the construction.
One of our professors works in Saudi Arabia. And he is very, because he's also very familiar with the World Economic Forum. He knows the co-author, Thierry Malheureux, of The Great Reset, that book. So he gives a bit of an insight of the thinking of these people. And these people are all, a lot of people call them psychopaths, but I call it little traumatized children. They have such an urge to change the world into a place where they are not the losers, and to change the world in a place where they don't get confronted with negative emotions, and to leave their mark, to leave their legacy. Mm-hmm. So it's classic dictatorship stuff, actually.
Yeah, I'd say. So going back to the farmer protests, can you just describe, because this, they've stopped now, but the...
Seasonal, always the beginning of July is... That's been for years.
Do their protests.
Yeah, also before COVID.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. So what were they trying to, what was their objective? What were they trying to accomplish?
So they're opposing the expropriation and the nitrogen legislation, so the Agenda 2030 goals. Now they're quite open now because we exposed it. So they are talking about Agenda 2030. The problem is that farmers don't understand that this is not just about nitrogen. This is not just about environmental rules. Mm-hmm. This is about trying to get them out of their farms to really steal and grab their land. So I don't think that the protests are effective enough. And I also see that the PSYOPs that are being carried out, like the CIA in the United States does, we have these units as well. I've written a lot of documentation about
agents provocateurs.
Yes, but they're also infiltrating. It's not only provocateur at the protests. No, they infiltrate at the meetings. Mm. And they're very, very effective in trying to break the coalition between the different farmer groups.
Interesting.
So by breaking the coalition, the resistance doesn't or loses.
They divide them up and then they don't have the power.
Yes.
So let me change gears and talk about immigration for a minute. Can you tell me this, what immigration is like in the Netherlands? You just, your government just collapsed over that theme.
It did not collapse. No, okay. Our prime minister thought, let's stop because then I become a real dictator, because those elections might happen. And then we have a period that there's a coalition forming because we don't have a two-party but a multi-party mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, everybody thinks we are liberated from Rutte. That's completely not the case. He is still in power and he will not step away. So it's not about migration. There is a problem with migration, but it's continuous. And this is a problem that you see in the United States and actually in the whole Western world. Even in Japan, there's now more migration than there ever was. And for Japan, I would say that might not be such a bad thing because it was such a inward insulated country. But for societies that are already open, the European society, if you can speak of one society at all, and the American, United States and Canada society, and I think even Canada might be worse off. If I come to Canada, it's more infiltrated with a group that on one hand integrates very neatly, on the other hand really shapes the culture. And we see that in Holland as well, and I don't have anything against any person. Racism is very far from me. I have a dance school where all religions, all colors, all races, all sexual preferences are more than welcome. But this migration is directed, and it's directed as a weapon. And that weapon is directed against the national identity and culture. And we see this very clearly. So I was talking to a German Jewish lady, because we're doing a podcast about the cudgel of anti-Semitism. Everybody who has systemic critique, they're called an anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. This is a very clear sign. Kennedy just the other day was also smeared with this. And she said,
convenient this, stick with which to beat the dog.
Yes. And the other one is sexism. Mm-hmm. The other one is racism. Corruption, racism. Yeah. She said, fascism rebooted or restarted in Germany in 2015. Now, why did she say that? Then you had Merkel saying, wir schaffen das, meaning we will do this together. Mm-hmm. What it actually meant is opening the borders, mm-hmm. letting in 3 million Syrian refugees. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of other nationalities came with the label Syrian refugees. Mm-hmm. And now you see actually in the bigger cities, these clashes with migrants, because such a big influx cannot readily be assimilated. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. They actually, what you see here now in Holland with the Ukrainian refugees, is that they purposely try to stoke polarization, because Dutch people have to wait for the assignment of a house. If you're in low income, there is a program that you can get subsidized housing, but you have to be on a list. So some people are on that list for 10 years. Then a Ukrainian comes in, they get free money, free housing, free everything.
That's just going to create division.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's on purpose.
Did I read there's a bunch of Ukrainians on a barge or a ship or something that's in the harbor or something?
Sure, they also do that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, they were doing that in Estonia when I was there last year. They had a cruise ship that they were staying
on. A cruise ship, yeah.
A lot of those people have gone back to Ukraine once they figured out that they weren't going to lose their whole country. But anyway, so you're saying that all of this stuff that happened with the president really didn't have anything to do with migration. It was just a convenient thing that they reported.
Yeah. So if you look at our prime minister, because we have a little bit different system.
Oh, right.
Our king is ceremonial mm-hmm. head of state, a bit like Germany, where the president is also only ceremonial, mm-hmm. and the prime minister is the
leader,
commander in chief, so to say. He has been in power for more than 12 years, and in those 12 years, although he claims to be from a right wing party, they have opened the borders like no other party has done. Mm. So we get an influx of between 100 and 200,000 people a year. And last year it was, I think, 400,000. Wow. So that means the growth of our population is coming solely from immigration. Mm-hmm. The birth rate has declined. Mm-hmm. So we have stagnated. It's around the replenishing or status quo.
1.7-ish.
Yeah. If this keeps up, it would decline. Mm-hmm. But actually, Holland is still growing as one of the fastest growing countries.
What nationalities typically are you getting here?
At the moment, of course, a lot of North Africans. That is still the main source of our mm-hmm. new population. But also Eastern Europeans.
Afghanistan?
Not that much, actually. Okay. Yeah. Iraq, I would say more, okay. But even that is not a big denomination. So the two biggest denominations are Turkish and mm-hmm. Moroccan.
Oh, okay.
And that started in the 60s and 70s already. Mm-hmm. But it's much wider now. Like Rotterdam and Amsterdam are together with New York, the most international cities.
Well, I read
the
most that nationalities. They have a 1994 or something, they passed a law that if you're here illegally as a migrant, you can't make use of any public services. You can't have an apartment. You mm-hmm. can't open a bank account. You mm-hmm. can't use the healthcare or education or something. Seems like a real good idea to discourage people from coming here illegally.
If they would do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If they were to enforce it.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the people who are coming here, migrating here, are making asylum claims, which then gives them a sort of legal status that
Exactly.
So they can take advantage of all that stuff.
And they do.
So it's a backdoor amnesty kind of thing like they're talking about in the United States.
Yes, and some people are expelled, but there's many ways around it. So mm-hmm. that takes years. And in those years, you still are assigned a spot in an asylum center. And it's not a nice life, but if mm-hmm. you come from nothing, you'll take it.
If you come from North Africa, anything is a nice life.
I wouldn't say that. There's a lot of things that are working in North Africa. I think our understanding of these societies is fundamentally flawed. Mm. Most people don't want to leave. So unfortunately, we get the people that are adventurous, are risk seekers, and have no money. So what do they add to our society? Most of the countries there are glad to get rid mm-hmm. of these mm-hmm. people. So a lot of them do not have a cooperation to take them back. So now it's your problem. Mm-hmm. Migration is of all ages. We've seen the new European look is white, but 8,000 years ago, it was the whole of Europe, also Scandinavia, was more olive colored. Hmm. So we had this migration from the Eurasian steppe coming in, and it actually replaced the original population.
Mm, fascinating.
And the United States is a much more recent example where we had Native Americans and they are almost completely replaced. Mm-hmm. So this migration is a natural occurrence. The difference here is that it's not natural,
it's
that it's
weaponized.
Directed, that it's weaponized. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We've he's the expert on weaponized migration in Latin America.
Yeah.
And has traveled with the caravans coming north and everything. Yeah, that's a fascinating subject. I'm sure
and
you'd like to talk more about
it. It's coupled to the tri-state city and the farmers because there's mm-hmm. expropriation of land. Mm-hmm. Some places they want to build migration centers mm-hmm. and they need to build a lot more houses for the influx of people.
So yeah, well, and we were talking about this yesterday that if everything they are doing is pointing to less people,
These
elites, they still want their services. They still want somebody to collect their garbage. They still want those sorts of things. So they need people to do those work. But they don't want you having babies to grow up to be those kind of workers. They want to just take people from elsewhere in the world and use them as their wage slaves, as their tax slaves. And I think that's the ultimate reason why we see that so much in the United States. 250,000 people every month coming in because the Democrats,
So Democrats are the implementers of Soros. Soros has taken over this party.
Yes. Yes, no question. And the migration is very much funded by Soros. I've proven, you can see in Open Society Foundation.
But this is his. This is one of his main goals. He calls it open society. He wants to get rid of national identity and of borders.
And we've tracked the funding from them to the different groups that assist the migrants as they come north to the United States. Yeah. So it's they're not even hiding it.
And all the polarization with LGBTI and woke and BLM and Antifa, it's all funded by Soros.
We have Antifa here.
Yeah, we do actually. It's a very sad bunch. They're not as aggressive as in other countries. So we mostly laugh at them because it's clearly a paid group of about 20 to 50 people.
Oh.
And especially when Thierry Baudet speaks, they're present and they shout and they call you names. They even call me Nazi, etc. And I'm like, Nazi, have you looked at me? I have a dance school with all nationalities. But for them, it's not sincere. These are brainwashed, privileged kids that do their thing for
the
social
same in the
justice.
US. We say that they're LARPing.
LARPing.
Yeah, we say they're LARPing. They're just out having fun. It's a way for me to go throw rocks at the police and not get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
And so it's their sense of adventure.
Don't throw rocks. They're only shouting. I have seen only one clash with Corona protesters. And that's also very strange. Why would they be against us? Mm-hmm. Because we are smeared as extreme right. And like it doesn't make any sense. And then we had a demonstration of the Pink Lion, they call themselves, and it's a gay rights movement against woke. So then you saw these gays protesting against woke, and these people with rainbow colors, now this is with pride this, pride that, there's a saturation, people don't want it anymore. But with those people with the flags that were actually much more aggressive than you would expect from them, there was also Antifa, and I was like, what do you have got to do with each other? And then looking at Candace Owens, her documentary about BLM, and seeing all the funds going from BLM to these LGBTI movements, made it very clear, this is carefully orchestrated by Soros and the likes.
Puppet masters.
Yes.
Dude, what about the Just Stop Oil crowd? We've seen a lot of these protests in England lately.
Extinction Rebellion, seven of them were convicted the day before yesterday because of incitement, and it's very similar to my case actually. So what I see in those movements are, again, a lot of useful idiots, a few paid staff above that, same donors, again, going from Soros. All these groups are the go-to when we need to push the government to take steps that are very unpopular so that they can say either to look to Europe or look to the courts, because also the courts have been infiltrated by Soros. So the legislation we see where the nitrogen rules are based upon for the farmers have been brought to court by these environmental groups, but this was clearly a corruption.
So Holland is all in on the net zero climate change stuff to the point that...
Not Holland. People don't want
the Netherlands.
No. The people, 80%, is vehemently against it. So this is a very small elite group. Mostly, and that's the funny thing, mostly the white privileged middle or upper middle class. And those are the people that are in BLM protests, in LGB protests, in Antifa protests. And it's very funny because I see those and I know, so during the week you're at your university in Delft and you're behaving as a normal student, and now you're LARPing.
They're LARPing. So most people in the, but I'm saying the government is all in on this.
The regime.
Agenda 2030.
I don't call it government because a government would say something about the legitimacy of them. So it clearly, because I participated in the election of 2021 and I've proven the election fraud. We have fought court cases over it. It's
so
very
same,
well documented.
Same here. Okay.
Yeah, everywhere. Canada, United States.
They're France, repeating this everywhere you go.
Repeating it. Mail-in ballots are a very important part of it, but also smearing it over multiple days, also doing polling until the elections. Mm-hmm. So it's a very fine-tuned system.
Amazing. Yeah. We saw yesterday, we went to the cruise ship terminal where they're talking about closing it down. Those darn tourists are just dirty and use up a lot of resources. So we want to reduce the number of tourists, but it seems like everything they're doing is bad for the economy. I mean, let's get rid of the food, let's get rid of the fishermen, let's get rid of the tourists.
It's a bit more complicated. So what they do, they take half of your commerce. Mm-hmm. And they give all kinds of reasons, it's COVID or environment or whatever. So then say, okay, but we'll keep you afloat. So you get an allowance. Mm-hmm. And
now we're in control.
Yes, exactly. So that's the whole spiel, so
perfect
to say.
That's-